Good morning. It's Friday, November 16th, 2007. This is Gen Tech, Teaching and Learning with Generative Technology. A week late, but not a dollar short. And this is Steve Whitaker from the University of Virginia.
And Mark Hooper from... Oh, sorry, Michael, you go
that
ahead.
That was... Friend. this is Michael Kelly from the University of Virginia.
And we're very well rehearsed, as you can see. Mark Hofer from College of William & Mary.
And we've got a special guest today. It's Sean Sharp, an instructional technology resource teacher from Floyd County, Virginia, and a master's student in instructional technology at Virginia Tech. Sean, thanks for being with us today.
No problem. Absolutely. I'm looking forward to this.
So I guess we should probably cover how we got connected again. And Mark, we were talking a little bit about this before we were recording. Don't take it as a dig against you.
Just keep the pressure up.
Well, he's not even following us, man. It's through Twitter. So Sean is on Twitter. And I think, Sean, I started to follow you through Tina Coffey, who was on three weeks ago, who I was following through Richard Sebastian, who is another student at UVA. And this is sort of the thousand roses blossoming from the social site, I guess, that Twitter is.
Well, and I will say that I actually met Tina in the virtual world Second Life. So that's that's where we first met, actually, was at the ISTE site, ISTE building, if you will, in Second Life. And I found out that she was an ITRT in Salem, and she found out I was an ITRT in Floyd, and that's kind of how things evolved, so to speak.
I think we all have these different thresholds.
The geeky quotient just really ratcheted up here in the last couple minutes.
the curve is blown.
Yeah.
I've never met somebody first, I think, in Second Life. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I've actually never met Tina face-to-face yet. So,
seriously? Oh, wow, that's interesting.
Yep.
Well, so I guess you guys made a connection afterwards, too. Was it on Twitter? Have you talked to each other?
We've sent emails, and we met in Second Life and sent emails a few times, and then we do follow each other on Twitter occasionally. Matter of fact, this is an interesting story. She put a tweet out there asking for something to do with internet safety, and that's one of the components that we've had to build into our school division, as all of them have.
Sure.
And I sent her a document that I got from a person that I know who actually is in Oregon that does a lot of work with internet safety. So it was one of those times where the Twitter technology was very successful, I think. You know, she put it out there, and I just happened to look at my thing somewhere in between what I was doing and realized I had something I could send her, so I shot off the attachment. So
that's that. I think that's that whole Sarowiecki's wisdom of crowds kind of notion, kind of at play, where you get together all of these people with like-minded interests, the ability to connect, and then maybe one of the 300 people you happen to be following knows the answer to your question, but that's how you get it.
Exactly.
And you get it fast, eh?
And you get it fast. That's true.
Right.
So Tina, for those of you who didn't hear the show, is an ITRT in Salem City Schools in Virginia, and we talked to her back in late October about her job. And Sean, in some ways, I mean, this is a parallel conversation, but in some ways I see this as a slightly different one too. What I might start off with, guys, if you don't mind, is just, Sean, to ask you to kind of give us the lay of the land a little bit. Tell us briefly about yourself, and then maybe tell us a little bit about Floyd County, not just geographically where it is, but maybe in terms of sort of the resources you guys have and the scope of your job, the number of schools and students and teachers that you support.
Okay, you bet. Well, I actually come from the Seattle area and sort of found Blacksburg through my wife and her sister. We were looking to move to a college town, and her sister said, well, you should check out Blacksburg. And so we looked at it and decided to go for it. So we moved to Blacksburg. We both worked in Montgomery County for a while just as substitute teachers. And then as we were looking for work, I went to a job fair, and Floyd County was looking to hire their ITRTs. And that's how I ended up in this position. And I worked at a private school out in the Seattle area as a technology coordinator, which I kind of did everything for maintaining the computers to helping teachers integrate into the classroom, et cetera, both on the admin side and the classroom side. So that's how we ended up here. And my wife actually taught in Floyd County until we had our baby 3 months ago. So that's kind of where I come from. Now, as far as being in Floyd County has 2,000 students, 5 schools. Our schools are grades K through 7, and there are 4 of those. And then there's the high school, which is grades 8 through 12. So it's a little bit different than kind of your standard setup, I think. I work at 3 of the K through 7 schools. So the way my work week sort of lays out is Monday I'm at one school, Tuesday I'm at a second school, Wednesday I'm at the third school, and then Thursday I float to where I'm needed, depending on what teachers request. And then Friday is the day where I work with the other ITRT, so there are actually two of us. And he works at one of the K-7 schools and at the high school. Now, as far as the infrastructure goes, we actually have a interesting setup here. Citizens Co-op is our backbone, essentially, our internet service provider for Floyd County. And we have a high-speed connection into the high school that then gets piped via fiber to the other schools. So, and we have a very, very good technology team here. And our technology director is really fantastic as far as knowing how to make all this stuff work. And then at each school, we have a technician, except for one. We actually have four technicians for five schools. So one technician floats between two schools. And those technicians literally make sure all the systems are up and running. And without them, you know, we'd be sunk as far as my job goes, to help teachers use technology. So that's kind of, you know, the general, I guess. Now, at each individual school, the principals have the ability to make decisions about technology for their specific situation. So at one school, we had a principal years ago that was very much into smart boards, and he took a lot of his funds and purchased smart boards for teachers to use. And so that has – and that's ended up sort of flowing over into the other schools, and other teachers, you know, started requesting smart boards. And so we've got a pretty good contingent of smart boards in our classrooms right now. We try to have them one at each grade level on a cart that can go from room to room. Some teachers actually have it in the room all the time and literally never use a whiteboard. That's all they use. So yeah, that's kind of, you know, that's sort of the general sense.
What about sort of the demographics of the student population? Again, part of what I think we were anticipating or thinking about our chat today is some of the challenges faced by more rural districts. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about, you know, the student population.
Let me jump in real quick, Michael. You know, sure. I mean, we're thinking about challenges, but also maybe some opportunities that come from working in a smaller district and, you know, and in, you know, maybe a more rural area too. So I think it probably, mm-hmm. I imagine that, you know, it works a little bit both ways.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As far as the sort of the technology access, it varies in Floyd mm-hmm. County, which I suppose is true anywhere. Some students don't have internet access at their homes. Some students don't even have a computer at their homes. Mm-hmm. So the only opportunity they get to interact with technology is when they come to school. Now, other students have the high-speed internet. They've got iPods. You know, they post to YouTube. They have MySpace pages or Facebook or whatever they're using as far as social network goes. So it really is quite a range here. Now, being rural, you have a lot of kids that do work on ranches, for example, or farming of some type. And they actually do use technology in those situations. And that's kind of, you know, I don't know all the ins and outs necessarily of what they use. But one of the things that we try to help teachers understand is that even in a rural school division, these students will be using technology on some level for the rest of their lives, even if they never leave Floyd County. Or if they go to, you know, one county over, and that's why it's important to be using this in your classroom with them, because it's not going to go away, and they're going to use it on some level, and exposure to that and integration of that is a good thing for them. So,
Sean, are you working on a given day, maybe when you're in one of the three K-7 schools, are you working more with the teachers, or are you working directly with the students, or is it some combination?
It's a combination. Currently this year, I'm tending to work more with the teachers. In the past years, I've done more of a balance, I think, where I'll actually model a lesson, come in and present something to a class. This year, typically the way it goes when I do that is I'll model the lesson for one group. Say a teacher has three groups of fifth graders. I'll model the lesson for the teacher with the fifth graders using the technology. And then the second group will come in and we'll team teach it. And the third time, I will literally step out and just watch. So the teacher can sort of, you know, take over and run the thing. But this year I've been working more with teachers on specific pieces of software to help them, you know, use in their classroom more than anything else. So it's a little bit different. But
why, Sean, why that shift? Is it because they're feeling more comfortable sort of leading, you know, using technology in their teaching, or is it more of a strategic shift, or why?
I think a couple things. One is for a lot of the teachers, they are more comfortable. And they also know me now. I've been, this is my third year, so I've developed some good relationships with the teachers, and so they don't necessarily feel like they need me to model a lesson so much. The other one is we're using some tools now that are starting to use some tools and starting to encourage the teachers to use these tools to collect data, essentially. And I know this is kind of the, you know, maybe the dry end of,
no,
of instructional technology.
No, actually, this is probably one of the more important backbones of it that we don't need to talk about much.
So we're trying to get the teachers to use some tools to actually then collect data on their students in terms of what their students understand, so they can then adjust their instruction based on that information.
So could you give us some examples of those tools? Are these like the,
sure.
the quick response classroom?
Yes, there's the e-instruction classroom performance system. We have those in. We have three in each school. We are also using ExamView Pro test generator software, which allows teachers to create a test that they can then administer in the computer lab online. The kids can take it, and it sort of mimics taking the SOL test online in May. So you get the kids used to that environment. And then there's just the data you can pull out of these, you know, the ExamView Pro stuff, and you can actually look and see specifically which question your whole group is not understanding, that kind of thing. We also use Test for Higher Standards and Reports Online in our school division, and that's another piece of technology. And these are assessment tools. So right now this year we're kind of looking at how to use technology for assessment. And I shouldn't say like this year as if we've never done it. We have been doing it. This year we're kind of putting more emphasis on it, I think. So that's some of the things we're doing.
Well, I'll respond to that. Let me just be perfectly honest and say that that's actually it seems to me that that's a little bit more cutting edge and maybe please don't take this the wrong way, but even a little bit more innovative than I might have expected coming from a district that isn't a part of the state that's typically kind of looked at as having not as much infrastructure, not as much funding. So mm-hmm. I mean, that's great. I like to have my my worldview kind of shattered a little bit. I mean, and I think in many ways that's one of the reasons we're doing this. Could you talk a little bit about how that might have come to be? Is it a question of funding just having been in place, or is it just an innovative group of people?
It's both. It's our director of instruction is a proponent of using technology. She always has been, and so she's actually, as I understand, in the past has you know written grants to receive funds to get smart boards for classrooms. Part of the Blue Ridge East Technology Consortium, we send our teachers to the Teacher Technology or Technology Training Institute, the TTI. They have two of those, one in the fall, one in the spring. The school division gets pieces of technology like the InterWrite pads, for example, from that group of school divisions. So there's the funding aspect, and then there's the people behind it that really strongly believe in using technology. Our superintendent strongly believes in using technology in education. So those are the things going on. And in many ways, I feel like in Floyd County, we are kind of innovative and on a level sort of, you know, pushing that bar higher, moving forward with technology. There are times where, because it's so rural, I've wondered, you know, how does this all play out down the road for these students, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I do fall back to that they will be using this technology no matter what they do. And at the same time, you know, part of me wonders, how is it being used, or what are they doing, or, you know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Those kinds of questions.
Well, is it more a question of how what you're doing in the schools is, you know, an authentic match for what they will be doing? Is that what you mean?
Exactly. Yeah. Down the road. And, you know, how many actually go on to, you know, college or junior college or university or whatever, versus how many, you know, go into a career path or choose to work, you know, in the county or those kinds of things. So,
kind of along those lines, maybe. Are you conscious of using a sort of a TPCK model as you're thinking through the kinds of uses of technology in the classroom?
Can you clarify TCPK for me?
Yeah, so a couple of weeks back, we did a little show on the idea that there's this this combination of technology and pedagogy and content and content knowledge, I guess, that really all have to kind of come together for a really successful use of technology. So,
okay.
You know, on one end, there's just the subject matter knowledge.
Right.
I shouldn't say one end, and one sort of realm is that. On another end is the pedagogical, not just how to teach the content, but also how to use the technology, how to teach the technology, how to teach the technology to interact with the content. And then finally, there's this technology side of it too. And I guess, I don't know, Mark and Michael jump in, but I mean, I guess the ideal is that a marriage of those three, a balanced marriage of those three, will allow you to really present some things in unique ways and useful ways for students. And I guess sort of related to what you were talking about, I was just wondering if you're, as you're integrating technology into the classroom, working with teachers to have them use it in their teaching, are you thinking about those kinds of uses that your unique students might have for the tools after they're out of school?
I think we are. I think the teachers, in a certain sense, do more of that in some ways than I do. I mean, My students, if you will, in a sense, are my teachers. They're the ones that I'm working with and trying to help learn about the technology and learn to use it effectively for who they are as a teacher. And as you guys know, every teacher is different. Their style is different. Their approach is different. They actually, I refer to them as far as the content in some areas. There's content that I don't know, but they have a good handle on, and so we'll work together to sort out, you know, how to present this or how to integrate a piece of technology with that content. And then from there, we just kind of move forward with the students. So does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me follow up with that real quick.
That's
something that we've talked about off and on for probably more than a year, the idea of kind of starting with teachers where they are and seeing like what might work with them with how they already teach and how you might kind of move them forward or whatever. But I guess I'm curious, could you kind of talk us through, especially as you were sort of getting to know the teachers, you said you've been there 3 years now, but right. As you were getting to know the teachers, how did you approach them? How did you talk with them to sort of, to get that collaboration started? Did you start with sort of content that they were teaching? Did you start with, here's some great resources I found, you know, sort of, can you kind of talk us through how that might, and I assume it was different for different teachers, of course, but
yes,
can you talk
absolutely.
About that generally maybe?
Yeah, absolutely. Basically, my approach in terms of working with teachers is to be very to be as non-threatening as I can be, and not my what I tell them is my ultimate goal is to, in a sense, make their job easier. I don't want to burden teachers with more that they have to do because their work life is already so full as it is.
That's a big point.
Yep. And they're juggling so many different things, from parents to behavior issues to special needs students to grades to, you know, faculty meetings to professional development obligations, et cetera. So my approach has always been, you know, I'm here, and I guess it's kind of an open hand approach, if you will. And as a teacher says, I would like to try this, then I'll sit down and we'll talk about how they might want to try it, or what kind of what the objective they're trying to teach is, or what SOLs they're working on. And then I'll come back and say, well, we could try this idea, we could do this idea, we could bring in the smart board and, you know, work with them and use it in this fashion. Now, the other part of this is, as far as teachers' general comfort with technology, and I'm sort of careful how I phrase this, but teachers who have been teaching for a long, long, long time tend to be less comfortable learning technology. Teachers who are brand new, just out of the gates, they're all over the technology right away, typically. So, for example, we've got some brand new first-year teachers this year. I've barely actually worked with them because I go in, I see what they're doing. I'm like, cool, great. You know, they're just stuff all the time.
Is that that comes from their professional development, their training as teachers from where they're coming from?
That's a good question. Or is it more that digital native, digital immigrant?
I think it's more the digital native, digital immigrant stuff, just from what I can tell. Some of them, you know, they had to take a technology education course in their master's work, you know, get their teaching credential. But a lot of it is just the fact that they use this stuff in their lives already.
Okay.
So they're very comfortable using it in the classroom. So my approach again is where is this teacher's comfort level with technology, and how do I move them forward in a way that doesn't overwhelm them and make them turn off to using technology? I think that's a key as well. You know, it's because of my comfort with technology doesn't mean that the teacher I'm going to work with has the same comfort level and the same understanding. So, you know, take them one step at a time. For example, I'll tell you a story from last year. I had a teacher come up to me and say, hey, I want to do some podcasting. And this guy is a civics teacher and did a, you know, was very comfortable using technology. He used the smart board all the time in his classroom, used the remote systems in his classroom all the time. So we sat down and he had a plan. He said, I do a current events activity every day. The kids read the local newspaper. Then they rewrite a story in their own words. They pick a topic, whether it's politics or sports or local news. And what he wanted to do was to turn those rewriting in their own words into a podcast and do like a news broadcast. And so we set him up with Audacity. Uh-huh. And by the time, you know, literally when I was in there, I don't know how many months later, well, near the end of the school year, he had to step out of the classroom and he asked me just to monitor the kids. The kids literally, these are 6th and 7th graders. They literally ran the whole show. They knew how to open Audacity. They knew how to, you know, record their podcast, add the music to the front and the end. They knew how to save it all as an MP3. It was fantastic, you know.
Excellent.
And they were doing that how often, Sean?
They were doing it every day.
Oh, every day.
Wow.
Every day. It was a daily thing. They would take their...
So just to quickly kind of address what I'd be thinking if I heard you say that right now, did that get in the way of some of the more routine things that the teacher was responsible for addressing in the classroom? Or is that just a sort of a short part of the day that the kids got used to after a little while? And
exactly. It was a short part of the day they got used to after a while, because every morning they would come in and they all got the Roanoke Times, the local paper, and they would have to scour it for an article and rewrite that article as part of their morning work. So he just added a little bit onto that by having groups of kids, either groups of 2 or 3, create a podcast from their rewritten articles.
So is that available? Excuse me, Steve.
No,
go
ahead.
Is that available? Can we link to it, or is it out there?
I'll have to see.
Is it an in-house kind of thing?
Well, no. It actually was on this teacher's classroom website, mm-hmm. but this teacher is no longer with us this year, unfortunately. So he and his wife moved back to their state of Indiana. And so we don't have another teacher doing it at this point, although there is somebody that has expressed an interest for later on in the school year to start doing some podcasting. So we're going to get there, I think.
I think that's a great example of really integrating a tool instead of having technology as event in the class.
Yes.
Starting absolutely. With something that was already being done and just tweaking it a little bit, eh?
Exactly. So it really depends on, you know, where a teacher is as far as their comfort level goes and what they want to do with the kids. And, you know, and I was impressed, you know, with the students. They just took off and went with it. So
what are one or two other success stories like that you might want to share with us, things that you've seen or done in your district that really stand out to you as models of the way it could be done?
Let's see here. Last year we had a math teacher, 7th grade math teacher. He actually is the ITRT this year at the high school. He used Excel in his classroom every day with graphs and charts. Every morning the kids would come in and he would have up on the smart board an Excel spreadsheet. They would make their lunch count and do their attendance. And as this happened, the graph or the chart would grow and change as the students came in and made this choice. So he's, you know, this is 7th grade math, so he's showing them, you know, Excel, technology, and a smart board, but not only that, taking data and making it visual.
Wow. Uh-huh.
So they can see, like, oh, so many kids are having a hamburger today, and they can actually see that graph change.
And there's a relevance factor there that probably makes it more engaging, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Sean, are there any tools that you're kind of geeked on and would like to see get going but haven't really played out or
yes.
He says yes. Definitively.
Yes, absolutely. I would like to see teachers actually integrate blogging into their classroom to get kids writing, you know, and get stuff out there. That's one of the things I've thought about is how could we incorporate blogs into our system here, into our, you know, and I think part. What's that?
Go
is
ahead.
That something we
keep going?
Yeah, we haven't. I haven't pursued it yet to the degree that I want to start doing it. I think I just haven't really seen the interest, and I sort of try to capitalize on interest as opposed to, you know, just throw things out there. I'd rather take something somebody's interested in and go with that in general, although I will put ideas out there. That's something I'd like to see happen. I think there's good potential for students to learn about publishing their writing in a weblog. And
you can –
what's that?
Yeah. I think you're ringing my bell over here.
You're on a topic dear to Michael's heart.
Excellent. Very good. And, you know, there are tools out there like Classroom Blogmeister, which is fantastic. Uh-huh. I mean, right. It allows the teacher to have control over what gets posted and when, and the comments. And so there's a level of, I guess, safety, if you will, as far as what's going on there, which I know is a big, big concern nowadays is kids' safety online and all
have
that.
Have you brought that up? I mean, when you start with where teachers are at and interest level, regarding blogs, is it something that you've put out there and it wasn't received, or what are some of the issues or things teachers might have had with it, or why hasn't it sort of taken off quite yet?
It's a good question. I did put it out there a couple of years ago when I first came on board here, and it just hasn't taken off yet. I think, I'm not really sure why, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I think it could just be an exposure thing. For example, this year we rolled out Office 2007, okay? And part of my job at the start of the year was to train teachers on Office 2007, and I did a thing on Outlook 2007. And, of course, Outlook 2007 has an RSS feed component. And the teachers are like, what's RSS?
Bingo.
So I'm like, okay, let's talk about RSS. And I tried to explain how RSS works and how it could be used in a classroom. And the example I give, of course, is probably one many have heard, that the idea of a journalism class. Mm-hmm. Where the kids are required to read, a certain number of newspapers. Well, if you just subscribe to the feed, then you can go through and read those papers very quickly, as opposed to having to go to the website each time and all that.
Right.
So I totally talked to the teachers about what RSS is and how that works and how you might consider using it in your classroom if you're having your kids go online to collect data of some type or read sites on a regular basis. So anyways, that's kind of, those little opportunities come up, and I explained that I use Google Reader and Outlook has an RSS reader and all that stuff. So I haven't talked about Twitter at all to my faculties yet.
And
I'm still
– go ahead. No, please.
I'm still kind of trying to sort out, for myself, how is Twitter going to be really effective and do I want to use it and all that sort of thing.
Twitter's a tough one, I think, to try to fit in sometimes.
Isn't it, Mark?
Yeah, it is.
Well, Twitter's one of those that I think in order to use it, you have to use it just all the time to get the real effect from it. It's just got to be an integrated part of your day. You've got to have something like Twitterific sitting on your desktop. And then,
sure.
So I don't know if there are faster or better ways to connect. Apparently, one of the people that I follow on Twitter said that it was mentioned on a TV show last night.
Oh, wow.
Like a primetime show, but not in a good way, apparently. It was like the creeps were on Twitter or something.
Right. The other part about it that I've actually benefited from is when people post links to specific articles having to do with educational technology.
Yep.
I follow a lot of ed tech people in my Twitter, and that's pretty much it. And so, plus a few random folks that I know. And when I get those links, it's like, that person is understands the whole Web 2.0 scene. And
exactly.
This is probably a good article, so I'll check it out,
And it may
idea of kind of setting up, folks like ITRTs, either in your division or across the state or whatever, to follow just like you talked about earlier, kind of somebody put a call out for, web safety kinds of resources. That makes, so much sense to have
sort
that
of a
really
focused
quick
group
response,
and, Sean, you combine what Mark and Michael are saying with the idea of not having Twitterific up on your desktop, but to just check the RSS later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
And then you've got this on-demand kind of model instead of an intrusive kind of the damn Tweety Birds or whatever. I can't tell how many times I've forgotten to turn the volume down and I'm sitting in my office in a meeting and all of a sudden it's like...
Right, exactly.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah.
What else are you personally kind of excited about that's on the horizon, whether it's a tool or maybe something like these new inexpensive laptop initiatives that are out there?
Well, that's a good question. What is it that I'm kind of jazzed about? I think, part of me would like to see some more online education opportunities. We've got a Moodle site set up in Floyd County, but myself and the other ITRT have talked about trying to get it actually, to be a usable tool more than it is. We just kind of put it out there and sort of let people play around with it, but I think there's potential there for online and distance education, and if there's a homebound kid, that kind of thing.
Right.
So that's exciting. I think the podcasting and sort of the whole Web 2.0 thing is still, I don't know, I still enjoy that sort of thing.
I kind of like that Web 2.0 is now becoming less a buzzword and more just a way of doing things online. We've gotten used to some of the aspects or benefits of it, whether it's the social side, the collaborative side, or even just the truly functional side of Web 2.0, which involves, you know, the Ajax automatic page updates without reloads. I mean, that's what makes Google Spreadsheets work.
That's what
gives you that feel that you're sitting in front of an app.
So I'm
with you. I'm really sort of personally excited that that shift is taking place now.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. And I'm excited about seeing more collaborative activities, you know, and seeing students collaborate together. We had a request recently from an adjacent county to do some type of a video conferencing project, and we're trying to sort out what that's going to look like, because we want to know kind of what, you know, what subject and what SOLs are we shooting for, what objectives are we trying to meet or have the kids learn and work on, and how can we incorporate two classrooms to do this kind of a thing. So those are possibilities.
Hey, Michael, what's the name of that video thing we were just talking about?
Moogalicious, or no?
It's
Moogalicious. No, but it's
Mogadishu.
I think I still even have a. No, I'm going to just zap it. It's Mogulus.
Mogulus. So, Sean, have you seen this?
No, I don't think so.
I'll see if we can get you an invite for it. But the idea is basically that as long as you've got a video camera set up, or I guess technically you can have as many computers in as many different places on the internet with cameras set up there. And at one other computer is this control panel. And someone can do live mixes in real time to create webcasts. So you have a board that shows you what all of those other cameras see. You can mix into that clips, other pre-recorded clips that are online. And then you've basically got a little recording studio where you're putting out a live show, switching between cameras, you know, doing field reports, putting video up there. It's fantastic. It's free. It's all that Web 2.0 stuff.
Yeah, that's great.
And I'd just love to see that in the hands of somebody like you, forward thinking, because I stare at it and I don't know what to do.
Right. You know, that could be really cool. Absolutely.
So what do you see as maybe in the next, as you look ahead to the next year, what do you see as an initiative or two that you'd like to start going or really to push that's already started?
And also, if I may add into that, Sean, what are some of the problems or challenges? Because we actually ended up talking a lot about opportunity and these positive things, but what are some of the challenge that you see yourself addressing in addition to these projects that you'd like to push out, that you know, what's on your docket in both regards?
Right. Okay. Wow, these are some pretty challenging questions. So,
I've got a really easy one next.
On the hot seat, feels like.
No, I'm going to ask that one, Steve.
Okay.
No, go ahead, John.
I would say I think one of the challenges that I think about, and I don't quite know how to address it, is sort of on a level is the amount of filtering that goes on in school divisions, and I understand the need for that on the one hand, but at the same time, I almost feel like if we're going to use the technology that's available and use the technology that the students are using themselves out there, we need to somehow shift it in some way. So, for example, our kids can't go to YouTube at all, you know, and yet I know they use it outside of school. And, the issue is it an educational or can it be an educational use? Well, sure it can be, absolutely. There are some university classes now that as I understand, that are talking about YouTube and how it, you know, how it works and plays out. And then, of course, there is TeacherTube and all that for educators. So I think that's one of those challenges, you know. And the other thing about blogging is all the Blogspot blogs are blocked in our school division as well. So you get there can be a dynamic involved where, you know, you get kids trying to challenge that structure and that system. And at the same time, if there's an educational reason for using it, I think it should be available, if that makes sense. But I think that's one of the challenges that's out there. So what was the first part of your question again?
Just more as you look in the next year, year and a half, 2 years, are there some initiatives that you're really excited about starting, or are there things that you're doing now that you'd really like to see pushed forward in a bigger way? For example, I like the protest generator software, use of that, or...
Right, the ExamView Pro, sure, you bet. I'd like to see that used just in the sense that it can make a teacher's job easier ultimately. Instead of having to sit and grade papers one at a time for a class of 30 kids or 25 kids, and then even have to do that two or three times because you have two or three groups, using that kind of a tool, it corrects it all for you, and you can get in there and look at the data. And you can even look at individual student scores if you're, you know, looking at an individual student for a specific reason. You can incorporate essay questions and short answer questions and go and put in the point value after the, you know, after you've read their answer. So I'd love to see more of that being used. You know, I did mention that we use the CPS, the e-instruction classroom performance system. And what I've observed there with students is it changes behavioral dynamics in a classroom. Kids, when they've got that thing in their hand, they pay attention. And kids that are more shy, for example, will actually take the risk and put out their answer, as opposed to they may not raise their hand. Hmm. So you get some of that going on as well. Another area for me, I think, that I'm a little interested in, or becoming more interested in, I should say, is assistive technology. And we just recently headed up our assistive technology committee, again, which I guess had fallen by the wayside, and how that, you know, how using technology can help those with special needs. So a couple years back, I worked on developing some specific PowerPoints for a student that where he would demonstrate recognition of shapes. And when he touched the screen on his laptop, the shape would bounce around. So he had to recognize the right shape, reach out and touch it, and then it would move. So little things like that kind of, you know, kind of interest me. So,
all right, Michael, the easy question.
Mac or PC?
Oh, man. that's a hot button issue here. not really. To be honest, personally, I have a G4 iBook, which I thoroughly love. Professionally, I have a Gateway tablet PC.
Fair enough.
So you know.
That's not an uncommon divide, I think.
No, it's not at all. It's not at all. It's funny because it actually came up yesterday. We were talking with the director of technology. He said something about having some funds and buy some computers, and you could buy some computers for, you know, and he wanted to get our input as ITRT is what we thought school division could use. I said, well, I'd like a MacBook Pro with 4 gigs of RAM. and of course, he shot right back and he says, I said computers, Sean. So I was like, ooh.
See, you need to educate the guy now.
Little date there, you know.
You need to bring it in there, run boot camp, show them Vista.
Exactly. You got it.
My last question then on that note is iPhone or iPod Touch?
Ooh. I mean, I don't have either one.
That's probably the best answer.
I wouldn't kick either one out of my pocket.
I suppose I'd like to have an iPhone ultimately, but I have an 8 gig Nano. That's my iPod of use at this point.
Is this the third generation with video?
No, it's not.
Okay.
It's the second generation, the black one. I love it.
My wife's got a Nano, and she adores it too. It's a great model iPod. I was sort of sorry to see they changed them, but the new ones are pretty fantastic. And that, by the way, just as to get back on topic, you know, $149 video player in your pocket. That's pretty exciting too. Yeah.
Exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely. What's that? My favorite color? Is that what you said?
Yes, I did.
Oh. Do you like peanut butter?
So I made a comment about hard questions, and now you're giving me easy ones. That's good. That's good. Very good. I thought you were going to say UVA, UVA or Virginia Tech.
Yeah. We'll know the answer to that one. We know where your funding goes. It's okay.
Yeah, right. Well, the question is, what am I supposed to say versus what I really think?
We can read between the lines there.
Exactly. That's right. I mean, it's funny being from the Northwest because there are these alliances and allegiances here that I really don't have any personal connection to, you know? It's kind of like, oh, okay, interesting.
Run deep. You know, next weekend is the big game, and I'll be at my in-law's house. They're all tech people there.
I see. Okay.
I'm hoping we can do to tech what we did to Miami a couple weeks ago.
Did you guys watch that
game?
There you go.
I did not.
It was just a thing of beauty.
I think Miami's in town this weekend.
Well, I hope that we've sufficiently softened them.
Okay.
You guys actually should have a pretty good time with them this week. Well, Sean, on that note.
Yes, on the note of sports.
Thank you for joining us. This has been a great show.
Yeah, I'm glad. I hope I was able to answer your questions in a way that worked, you know.
Definitely.
I mean, it is a rural school division, and I'm sure if you asked other ITRTs from, say, Pulaski or Giles or Carroll or, you know, Patrick County, you'd probably get a whole other set of answers. I mean, I feel very fortunate in Floyd in that we do have good infrastructure. We've got great technicians. And even though our director of technology likes to dig me sometimes for liking Apple, he's a good guy and provides a lot. I mean, there's really nothing that I haven't asked for that, you know, in a sense that, that they're not willing to offer us. So, exactly. Yeah. You know, I just got to keep putting that out there,
But it sounds like that is in many ways the, you know, the element that needs to be in place for success. And that's that buy-in and support.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm glad that you're feeling supported in what you're doing, and the work that you are doing is innovative and I think really very much the model of what we'd love to see happen elsewhere. So thanks again for your time, Sean.
You're welcome.
Yeah, we'll check it back in with you at some point, Sean, for sure.
Okay, sounds good.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, you too. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.